Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, from what sources did Ayelet Rose Gottlieb draw the inspiration for her latest work, Shiva? Ayelet Rose Gottlieb is a composer and musician who was born in Jerusalem. She's one of the four members of the singing group Mikale, which was commissioned by composer John Zorn to arrange, perform, and record selections from his Book of Angels, Masada Book 2. As a composer, she's an explorer of sound and seeker of musical adventures. She draws on jazz, Middle Eastern and Jewish music for inspiration, and her innovative approach to composition and improvisation has led her to collaborate with some of the leading musicians of our time, including Zorn, Bobby McFerrin, the Ethel String Quartet, Anat Fort, and Joe Lovano. She's performed at numerous venues and festivals internationally. In her latest project, Shiva, Ayelet takes another leap as a composer as she presents a set of music created for an instrumental ensemble. In this recording, released on vinyl, Ayelet is accompanied by the Ethel String Quartet and percussionist Satoshi Takeshi. She joins as a vocalist only to perform the final movement, Epilogue, Masan Yashan, An Old Shed. Ayelet currently lives in Vancouver, Canada, with her husband and three children, the youngest of whom we can hear in the background here. She spoke with us about her life, music, and this latest project.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Ayelet. We spoke a couple of years ago, but I just wanted to repeat a little bit about your own background. You were born in Jerusalem, but you've moved around a lot. Where have you lived?
So I lived after Jerusalem. I moved to Ramat HaSharon near Tel Aviv, and from there we moved to Boston to study music. I studied at New England Conservatory, and then moved to New York to pursue my life in music. My husband is an animator, so he moved around, and I would go back and forth between New York and wherever he was living. So for a while he was in LA, and then for a while he was in New Zealand, Wellington, New Zealand. Then we went back to Israel for a couple years, and from there we moved to London, UK, and now we're in Vancouver.
Also, he's Israeli?
He's Israeli, yes. Okay. He's from the north of Israel, yeah.
How did you happen to choose Vancouver?
Well, we've been following my husband's work, basically, is the reason we've been moving. He's an animator in the film industry, and this is where a lot of that industry is based right now. Uh-huh. So we found ourselves here, but we like it. We're enjoying it so far.
Yeah, you mentioned the New England Conservatory. I'd like you to speak a little bit about your actual musical background. Mm-hmm. You started out with a classical education, didn't you?
Yes, I did. As a child, I studied classical music, and I continued playing classical flute all the way through the end of high school. And parallel to that, I started getting interested in jazz and other more open, improvised forms of music. I met Arnie Lawrence when I was 16 in Jerusalem. He just moved there. He was a saxophone player who came to Jerusalem from New York after having played with Dizzy Gillespie, Billie Holiday, Liza Minnelli, and many, many others. And I was lucky enough to be there at that time. He had a regular gig at a cafe in Jerusalem, and me and my friend Julia Feldman, who's a jazz singer, we would go there every time he played, and slowly he started bringing us on stage with him. and he became my most, I would say, the most meaningful mentor that I had, parallel to my formal studies at the arts high school, where I studied classical music and some jazz on the flute. But with Arnie, I started to sing, and parallel to that, I started composing music. And after that, I went to Rimon, which is a music school in Israel, which is a branch of Berklee College of Music. And from there, I continued to New England Conservatory in Boston, where I studied with amazing musicians like George Russell and Cecil McBee and Dominique Eid and Rand Blake. And then I just started my life as a professional musician in New York.
I have read that one of your interests is improvisation as it is used in ethnic music. Are there a lot of cultures that use improvisation in their own, let's say, ethnic or folk music?
Yes, I would say, I mean, I don't know if every single culture, but many cultures do. Of course, in Western music, it's expressed mostly in the idiom of jazz and free improvised music. But traditionally, even in classical music, they would improvise. And there still are sections within classical pieces called the cadence, for example, where the soloist would improvise a little section. And definitely Arabic music is there's a lot of improvisation going on. In Indian music, there's a lot of improvisation going on. And I'm sure in other musical forms that I know less about, there's also an element of improvisation. I think improvisation is the first language of music that the most natural way to express yourself musically. So I'm sure that it's a cross-cultural thing that manifests itself in many cultures and music.
Aside from composing and performing, you also teach, don't you?
Yes.
Where do you teach? And who do you teach?
At the moment, I just gave birth very recently, so I only teach a little bit at home. But, I mean, it's been on and off for many years in different colleges, different music schools, or privately at home, depending on where I'm living and what I'm doing at the time. And now I do workshops on and off occasionally, one-off workshops, and I teach privately at home, just a few students at the moment.
What do you teach? Do you teach flute?
I teach voice. I teach improvisation. It really depends on what the student comes to study with me for. But my students are mostly people who heard me perform and want something specifically for me from my vocabulary and music. So I really enjoy working on different aspects of music with my students.
I know you've worked with several groups. Do you still?
Yes, I do. I still work with Mikale, the vocal quartet formed by John Zorn. I have a band here in Vancouver that I on and off work with. And now I'm focused on my new album, Shiva.
Yeah, I want to get to that later, but first I'd like to talk about what you were doing before. Since we last spoke 3 years ago, you came out with your fourth album, which was Roadsides. Mm-hmm. And that has works in it by Israeli and Palestinian poets. And I was wondering if you could tell us about that.
Sure. I mean, it's a collection of poems that I composed music to over a long stretch of time. Basically, they accumulated over about 15 years. Really, since I really started composing, and I would find a poem somewhere that resonated with me and compose music to it. So eventually I found myself with this big collection of works that seemed to fit together. And I just decided to combine it into one project that has, that was the tying, the thing that tied everything together was the different voices from Israel, Palestine, that I set to music. And the band also reflected the same kind of sentiment. The band is also a mixture of men and women and Arabs and Jews, which was what I wanted to bring forth in that project.
So is this a project that you did in Israel?
I did, yes, everyone. I recorded it in Israel. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I read the following description of your music, and I want to know if you would describe your music the same way, okay? It says, her unique blend of jazz, Middle Eastern, and Jewish music, combined with her innovative approach to composition and improvisation. Would you describe your music this way?
I guess I would. I mean, I think my music combines all these different elements, and that's what together creates the puzzle that is my individual voice in music. I think the good and the bad about my music is that it doesn't fit into one specific box.
How is that bad?
Well, it's harder to, I guess, to when you're trying to explain it to people, it's harder to explain something that's many things than it is when you're in a specific genre and you can say, I'm a jazz musician, I'm a Middle Eastern musician, you know. Mm-hmm. It's harder when your music combines very many elements and really doesn't fall into one box. But at the same time, I think that's a reflection of our times. When I listen to many of my contemporaries who I really love, whose work I really love, many of them don't fall into a single box. And I think that's really something that stems from our reality, the environment we live in these days, which is much more global. The cultural exchange is much wider than maybe it was in previous periods in time. Mm-hmm. When people would focus on one thing, and perhaps they didn't then either, and maybe things that we have a name for now are also hybrids of various cultures, but we now call them one thing.
Well, I guess there was less communication between different groups than before.
Yeah, but even if I think about the history of jazz music, what we call jazz or traditional jazz, that also comes from a combination of African music, European music. You know, it comes from a hybrid of different styles that formed into this thing that we now call jazz, mm-hmm. which also is a roof for many, many different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. So maybe whatever it is that me and my contemporaries are doing now at the moment has no name, but will eventually find a name for itself. So, you know,
okay.
It's for now, I guess this definition that you read to me sounds pretty close to what it is.
Can you tell us about your new project, Shiva?
Sure. So Shiva is my first larger instrumental piece that I composed. I wrote small pieces for just instrumental music, but most of my work until now has been primarily for myself as a vocalist plus a band that varies. And in this piece, I hardly sing. It's mostly instrumental for a string quartet and percussion. And within the boundaries of a string quartet, it also stretches the boundaries because it incorporates a lot of improvisation and different styles of improvisation as well. Parallel to through composed sections that are written in a more traditional style. I composed it following the death of three of my friends, who were all young people who died under various circumstances in the same year. And that really hit me hard, and I needed to find a way to confront death as a young person. I hadn't experienced a lot of encounters with death at the time, and most of the people who I knew who passed away were older people, my grandfather, my two grandfathers, and not so much young people like that. My friends from high school, my friends who I made music with. So this piece was for me a way to ask myself questions about death and confront the concept of death. And I felt that I needed to do this without using words, but rather use sounds and think about these ideas through music. I drew my inspiration for this piece from Jewish rituals of mourning that are reflected in the form of the piece and also in the titles of the different sections, and from Buddhist rituals of mourning, or more than rituals, it's concepts, I guess, of post-death concepts that I came to be familiar with from the girlfriend of one of the people who I composed this piece for, Take Toriyama. Take was my collaborator for many years. He performed on several of my albums, and I played music with him for about 5 years before he passed away. And once he died, his girlfriend and I kept in touch for a while, and she would walk around with a bag with some of his bells inside the bag. And at one point I asked her about it, that sound that kept following us when we would walk together. And she had mentioned to me the concept that the spirit lingers in the world for 49 days after the person has passed. So from that, I collected bells, 49 bells from different countries that I visited over a long stretch of time. And sculptor Michel Jaffe made a sound sculpture for this piece that we called the blanket with 49 bells that's being played throughout the piece. And also from his funeral, which was a Buddhist funeral, the strongest thing that I remember from that funeral is the use of the gong, which was really a rattling sound and a very, very powerful sound that triggered a lot of emotions for me during that funeral. So I brought in that sound into the piece as well. So that's basically what the background is for that. And it's been a very interesting time for me since the album was released, because it's been a few years since I composed it and since I recorded the piece with amazing musicians. Ethel Quartet recorded it with Satoshi Takeshi on percussion. And it's been a while. So finally, now when it's released, I'm re-experiencing so much of what I went through at the time when I wrote the piece and recorded the piece, and thinking again about these people and about everything that has come to be since then, the people who passed and the people who joined the world. It's been a very intense time for me.
It was released as an LP, right, rather than a CD?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, the label that released it, 482 Music, is it's a New York-based label, and Mike, who runs the label, likes releasing albums on LPs. He has some CDs and some LPs, but he does have that line of LPs. And for me, releasing an LP has been a lifelong dream. I love LPs. It's my favorite form of listening to music. And I thought it was an appropriate form for this particular album, because this album requires a certain space when you listen to it. It requires some quiet, it requires sitting down and listening, and I find that LPs lend themselves to that much more than other forms of listening to music, and they also have the bonus of having beautiful artwork presented in a big way. And we chose to use Noah Haruvi's painting Babel for the album cover because it really felt to me like it resonated and reflected the ideas that I wanted to bring forth in this album.
Is the sound different on an LP and on a CD?
Yes, of course it is. It's much warmer sound. It depends, of course, on what stereo you have. But it's, you know, when you listen, especially to MP3s, that a lot of us listen to music that way these days, the music is compressed and everything sounds more condensed. And on an LP, you hear the full range of sound and the warmth of the sound. For me, it's the most inspired way to listen to music. And I listen to most of my music that way.
Can you tell us something about Yehuda Amichai's poem, An Old Tool Shed?
Now, it's the epilogue to, I composed it as an epilogue to Shiva, and then it actually made its way also in another arrangement into Roadsides. It's actually on both albums. It's a poem that I've known since I can remember myself. I've had that that book of poems by Yehuda Amichai called Hazman, The Time or Time. And I had that book in my bag on the day of Take's funeral. And that specific poem kept coming back to me during that time. I kept reading it again and again. I think what I saw in that poem, I don't know if that's what Yehuda Amichai intended, but what I read in the poem was the tool shed to me seemed like an abandoned body that the spirit had abandoned, and the body was still there and objects were still there, but the soul has left. And that question of what is the body without the spirit that used to live in it, that keeps resonating from that poem, is what drew me to that poem, and that's why it's become part of Shiva.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us. And thank your daughter for letting you.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with She'ela from Ayelet Rose Gottlieb's new release, Shiva. See you next week.